Okay, I call the meeting to order. This is the MPOJC Urbanized Area Policy Board. Today is Wednesday, January 29th, 2025, and we're at the City of Iowa City Council Chambers. Thanks, everyone, for attending. First, we recognize alternates and welcome new board members. Kent, were you going to? Oh, he's moving in some chairs here. And let's see, new board members.
Yeah, sorry. V. Fixmer Arrays is here for John Green. And Tim Kasparik, I think, is new to the group as of when he became mayor of Tiffin. So welcome to those and welcome everyone else.
Okay, and I see Mayor Megan's here right now, entering. Okay. So first order of business is consider approval of meeting minutes. They were all circulated. Is there any additions or corrections? I need a motion then to adopt.
Move approval.
Move approval. Is there a second?
Second, Mo.
Second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Motion carries. Okay, set next board meeting. And Kent, you were going to...
Yeah, tentatively, we've got March 26th for our next meeting. Location to be determined. We have some federal requirements that are due on April 1st, so that's the last Wednesday before our typical Wednesday meeting time before those are due.
Does that seem to be okay with everyone? Okay, I see a lot of head nods. Okay, we'll go on to public discussion of any item not on the agenda. Anyone want to speak on an item not on the agenda today? Okay, we'll go on to administration. Kent, you're going to talk about the nominating committee.
Yeah, so agenda item 3A is a report from the nominating committee for the 2025 MPOJC board officers. I'm Kent Ralston, executive director of the MPO. Welcome to everyone. Back at your November meeting, you appointed a three-person nominating committee to nominate the chair and vice chair for this calendar year. The committee was comprised of John Green from Johnson County, Megan Alter from Iowa City, and Brian Wason from North Liberty. As noted at your November meeting, obviously the current chair is Louise Fromm and the vice chair is Rod Sullivan with the county. Both the chair and vice chair have served in these roles for 1 year, and there's a two-year maximum for both of those posts. And at this time, I'd just like to ask someone from the nominating committee what they discussed and how they'd like to proceed.
So, yeah.
You and me both.
You were okay?
Yes, yeah. Yes,
so,
yes.
We, after much consideration, decided that we would like to nominate Louise as the chair and Rod as the vice chair.
Very good.
Thank you.
Maybe a second for that, or is...
We need a motion. Did you...
I would move
that. Did you move that?
Yep.
I will second.
And second? Okay. Is there... motion and second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Okay, thanks. We'll go on to consider approval of the budget and financial forecast.
Yeah, thanks. Agenda item 3B. The proposed FY26 budget and financial forecast, which was attached in your packet for your review. The primary focus of the MPO continues to be fulfilling federal and state requirements necessary for our entities to receive state and federal funding and to produce locally generated traffic studies, grant applications, mapping services, and so forth for our entities. As many of you know, our group is organized as a division of the City of Iowa City's Neighborhood and Development Services Department, and MPOJC staff then also serve as NDS staff in that capacity. Personnel costs are determined by the collective bargaining agreement between Iowa City and the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, or AFSCME, as most of us know it. The overall budget reflects about a 2.38% increase from FY25, primarily due to increases in costs for staff benefits and wages, which has been the same for us for the last decade or so. Our budget doesn't change too much. After accounting for staff time devoted solely to City of Iowa City functions, MPO assessments are based on population of MPO entities. In FY25, our total budget was about $790,000, and this year the proposed budget looks like it's about $809,000, so about $19,000 or $20,000 difference there between last year and the proposal for this year. The budget also reflects the continued use of internal carryover funds, as well as DOT planning funds. And as I mentioned at your last meeting, we'll use about $280,000 in PL funds, or planning funds as the DOT calls them, which is an increase from about $230,000 in the previous year. And the increase is due to extra funding we got from the new transportation legislation that was passed a year or two ago. That said, I typically mention that I remain concerned with long-term federal support for the MPO, and this year clearly is no different with the federal funding freeze that started on Monday and what ended yesterday or today. So I'll keep you apprised of that as it moves forward, but MPO staff are funded federally, so that's a concern to us. All of that said, unless there's any questions, I'd ask that you please consider approval of the FY 26 MPO budget and financial forecast. And like I say, I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Is there a motion for approval?
So moved.
Second.
Motion and second. Discussion. Any discussion or questions? All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, motion carries unanimously. Okay, now you're going to go through the FY 26 assessments for the East Central Iowa Council of Governments.
Yeah, so agenda item 3C is the approval, as the mayor said, of the Johnson County assessments for the East Central Iowa Council of Governments. Our MPO collects East Central Iowa Council of Governments dues for Johnson County entities and forwards those funds on to the East Central Iowa Council of Governments. ECICOG assessments are calculated on a per capita basis for the counties that they serve, and then we in turn then calculate a per capita assessment for each governmental entity within our own county. So our MPO acts as a pass-through for your funds onto ECICOG. For FY 26, ECICOG proposed a 2% increase for all the counties that it serves. And as many of you know, ECICOG is the designated regional planning affiliation for East Central Iowa, including Benton, Cedar, Iowa, Johnson, Jones, Lynn, Tama, and Washington counties. They provide planning and grant administration services in the areas of community economic development, housing, transportation, and so forth. And Karen Kurt, who is the director of East Central Iowa Council of Governments, is here tonight. I'm sure she'd be happy to answer any questions you have about her budget specifically, or any of the functions that they can provide for your entities.
Welcome, Karen. Nice to see you. Any questions for Executive Director Karen? Yes.
Yeah, I do have a question. Karen, could you talk a little bit about, to the extent that you have any knowledge whatsoever of how the current federal funding is going to affect ECICOG?
I think we're in the same state that everyone else is in terms of what we know or don't know. Certainly ECCOG is very dependent on state and federal funding. Unlike the MPO, perhaps where a majority of the funds are coming from the federal government, we probably have a mixture of federal government, some funding directly from the state, and then a small portion that's coming. We provide services and then we're paid for some of those services. And I recognize many of you from strategic planning or goal setting sessions with your councils, and that would be an example of a fee for service. And then the amount that we collect in terms of our assessment is a pretty minor part of our budget. It's about 12%, and it's a declining portion of our budget. So like everybody else, we're intently watching sort of how things are gonna play out. And also thinking about if, as we know, local government budgets are under pressure, if there's a way that we can look at how regionalism could potentially support through some collective efforts, it's also on our plate.
So for the MPO budget, the $280,000 that I mentioned that you all just approved in the last agenda item represents about half of the MPO budget once you've taken out Iowa City's portion. So Iowa City always pays a little bit more because of the services we provide to Iowa City that we don't provide to other communities. But it's about half of our funding, which is all, for the most part, staff operations. So it does have a big effect on us. Clearly, we don't have as many programs and aren't as large as ECCOG, but needless to say, not good for either one of our organizations should another federal funding freeze occur or those funds be withdrawn altogether. There's 9 MPOs in the state of Iowa, 18 RPAs, and we would all be in the same position for the most part.
And I know I did pass out our report and a fact sheet on Johnson County specifically, but I might have missed a few folks. If there's anyone that didn't get it, I'm happy to pass that along.
Just by way of background for interest, too, when we're talking about some of this for MPOs, like Tampa, Florida, for instance, I think has 6 or 8 MPOs within just the Tampa metro area, just by way of how a big community grows like that. So so clearly it will have a huge effect on MPOs and RPAs across the country as well.
Any other questions? Thank you for coming, Karen.
Pleasure.
So we need to consider approval of this ECOG assessments. Is there a motion?
So moved. No.
Motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Second. Okay. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Okay. And then you're going to talk about the appointments.
Correct. So for agenda item 3D, consider appointments to the East Central Iowa Council of Governments. At your November meeting, we discussed the MPO entities responsible for appointments to the East Central Iowa Council of Governments, Board of Directors for 2025. And per our bylaws, the original responsible entities to appoint elected officials included Johnson County, Tiffin, and Hills. The City of Hills indicated that they're unable to fill the appointment this year, so that opportunity was then extended to Shoeyville, who also indicated they were unable to fill that position this year. So that was then offered to University Heights, and University Heights accepted that appointment. In addition to that, the City of Tiffin then agreed to allow the City of North Liberty to fill their appointment, effectively allowing them to have a second year on the ECOG board for continuity purposes. And I know Mayor Chris Hoffman at our last meeting had indicated a desire to do that. So Tiffin was fine with moving in that direction. So after all that shakeup, the appointments that we have before us today for Johnson County would be John Green, County Supervisor, the City of North Liberty, Chris Hoffman, Mayor, the City of University Heights, which is Nick Herbold, which is on the City Council, and then the citizen appointment for which the Board of Supervisors also has will be Allison Wells, a staff member from Johnson County who is also on the board this last year. Unless there's any questions, we're asking you to consider approval of the appointments of the ECOG Board of Directors for the calendar year.
Is there a motion?
So moved.
There's a motion. Second?
Second.
Okay. Thank you. Is there any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Then we'll talk about the orientation opportunity.
Yeah, real quick, just agenda item 3E. For new board members or current board members who desire a refresher, I always offer an orientation that's typically held around the February or March, depending on when we can get folks together. It usually takes about an hour or less, and we talk a little bit about what the MPO does, what we don't do, how we're funded, those types of things. So by a simple show of hands, if anyone's interested in the orientation, I'll reach out to you and whoever else it would be on the rural board after this meeting and try and find a time that works for folks. Fee, okay. Anyone else this year? Okay, and if you change your mind. Okay.
I had one. It was good.
Yeah.
It was so new to me.
Okay. V and Molly, I'll reach out to you both. And if anyone else changes their mind, of course, just reach out and let me know. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go to consider approval of the Federal Transit Administration Section 5307. And this is a formula funding apportionment for FY 2024. And Hannah is going to present it. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Hannah Neal, Associate Transportation Planner. Like Louise said, today we're asking the Policy Board to approve the apportionment of the FY24 FTA 5307 operating funds. Iowa DOT has indicated that MPOJC has a total of $4,954,667 available in FY24. FTA Section 5307 funding. This amount includes our STIC or Small Transit Intensive Communities funding as well. So a little bit of background. For more than 10 years, the MPO used the same local formula to distribute these funds. based on prior year transit statistics from each of the three transit systems, Coralville, Iowa City, University of Iowa campus. The MPO's local formula was calculated based on 25% operating and maintenance costs, 25% locally determined income, 25% revenue miles, and 25% fare revenue. Prior to going fare free on August 1st in 2023, Iowa City Transit requested a review of this formula. It should also be noted that University of Iowa campus does not charge a fare and has never received credit for the fare revenue portion of this formula. Although the percentage allocation to each of these transit systems has fluctuated over the years, a review of past allocations shows that this year over year, it's a small change. After discussions with all three transit managers, a consensus was reached to adopt a fixed percentage-based allocation starting with FY23 allocations and extending through FY27. Based on the historic average and to review these percentages if or when there are major changes to any of the systems like route changes or operating costs, anyone can request a review of these percentages at any time. As a reminder, at your July 2023 meeting, you approved the following fixed percentages to apportion the FTA 5307 funds. Coralville Transit gets 16.1%, Iowa City Transit gets 60.5%, and University of Iowa campus gets 23.4%. The table in your packet shows the FY24 transit statistics and proposed funding apportionment amounts, as well as the FY23 allocations for comparison. Once approved, the MPO will complete and submit the required annual FTA Section 5307 applications on behalf of each of the three transit systems. And this year, the proposed FY24 apportionments for Coralville Transit is $797,701, $2,997,574 for Iowa City Transit, and University of Iowa campus would get $1,159,392. So today, staff is requesting the approval of the apportionment of these funds. And just so you know, the Technical Advisory Committee at their meeting last week voted unanimously to recommend approval. If you have any questions, I'm happy to take them now.
I have a few questions.
Yeah.
This states that that it can be a review of these percentages if when a major change in any of the systems. It has the examples of routes or operating costs.
Yeah.
Seems a bit vague. Can you elaborate what major change may what might constitute a major change?
It could be a major change or something as simple as you believe that the formula should be reviewed. It's really any time you feel that there is grounds, anyone can request a change. At that time, if a change is requested, it will go to the three transit managers who will discuss, and then that recommendation will go to the Technical Advisory Committee who will further deliberate and then make a recommendation to the board. Ultimately, it is the board's formula. You vote on it. It could be such a thing where you say, where the board decides CAMBUS gets 65% and the remaining 35% is divided between Iowa City and Coralville. It's truly your formula. The money is given to the MPO and local jurisdiction, our governing board decides how those funds are used.
Yeah, sorry, and I would just add, I think the idea was behind that was that we wouldn't revisit this every year. So when we had it, we put together a committee of the transit managers, what are we in our second or third year of using this formula. I think the idea was we'd try and have some consistency and just review it if when there was a big change. But like Hannah said, we can review it anytime we want. For consistency purposes for budgeting, I think the idea was we'd try and keep it in place for a few, you know, 3 or 5 years, maybe revisit it, keep it in place for another 3 or 5 years, just so that if there are big changes in the percentages that are allocated to each one of the agencies, there weren't wild swings in your budgets, just for obvious reasons, that's problematic.
Is there an ideal time of year for someone, if there was a desire to tax yeah, about to be reviewed?
There is. I mean, at this point in time, it could probably be changed this year, although it would be difficult, and I would probably advise against it just because Hannah's up against some deadlines for federal requirements that we have to submit for. Ideally, I would say this is probably the best for this year, what we've proposed. But clearly after this, the last time we did this, we met in July, or summer anyway, with a committee. And that gives us an entire year to basically work out a new formula, figure out what needs to happen, take that through the technical advisory committee, and then come back to this board. So ideally it would happen probably starting this summer.
I think, you know, I'd like to share that CAN Bus does feel that they've experienced some pretty significant major changes over the last couple of years. And they provided me a list, one of them being between 2022 and 2024, they had to expand their full-time staff from 6.5 to 14.5. For those that aren't aware, CAN Bus is almost entirely student-operated with 160 students. And so increasing the full-time staff like that is a pretty dramatic cost that they had to incur. Three of those are for full-time training staff to comply with federal regulations relating to CDL training and testing, which is, you know, some new regulations with the best interests of safety for operations and so forth. And additionally, those three positions do benefit Iowa City Transit, Coralville Transit, Linn County Lifts, and also Johnson County Seats, because CAN Bus provides that testing for those agencies when they have an operator that needs to have their CDL testing done. In 2023, they had to implement paratransit and on-demand scheduling software. Prior to that, it was all done by hand over the telephone. It's now much more friendly for anyone that needs to use those services. You can do that online. It's much more expedited and better tracking of data. And then in a couple months, in April of this year, service will be expanding for CAN Bus with the new on-demand service to the new medical center in North Liberty with Iowa Healthcare. I certainly want to acknowledge that. I definitely do appreciate, you know, the city of Iowa City Transit asking for the formula to be reviewed prior to going fare-free. As stated, you know, CAN Bus has always been a zero-fare system, but has been at a disadvantage because that's part of the formula process. You know, I think, you know, moving forward with FY24 is appropriate with these numbers, but that would be an entire year of Iowa City Transit being fare-free or zero fare. I think there's likely some better indicators that may be able to demonstrate what I think the fare was trying to demonstrate. Maybe that's ridership. But, you know, for FY24, Iowa City Transit will essentially be receiving credit for a fare collection that it does not collect. And so I think I think it's appropriate for these percentages, I think today that I will have to be voting in opposition of the measure, and that soon that there will be a request for the percentages to be reevaluated, just to see, you know, take into account the success that Iowa City Transit has had with its increased ridership and so forth, and try to find something that's a little bit more equitable across the board. So, thank you.
Greg, I just have a question. You know, you indicated that it's fare-free. So is there not a percentage of student fees that are allocated for transportation?
There are, but all of our services, Iowa City Transit, Coralville Transit, CAN Bus, are open to the general public, free fare, fare-free. Zero fare.
I just think that when you're bringing forth the information, which, you know, certainly agree with that, having transparency as to what the university is actually receiving in terms of funding for that percentage would be helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's very fair. Yeah.
And in fairness, too, I believe it was the case that the student fees were never captured as part of the fare in the old formula, which by which then we took a 10-year average and made the formulas the percentages you're looking at today. So it's there to your point, V, there's a dozen different ways we could do this. And if there's a request, which it sounds like there will be, to take a look at this again, everything's on the table.
Any other discussion before we vote?
I'm just curious. How many, you mentioned about the performing the testing for the other operators. How many have been tested? First of all, I missed How long Campus has been responsible for that?
Campus is providing it as a service to the other agencies, because it's been a collective challenge for all transit providers in the state, certainly being able to get drivers trained and so forth. And Campus made that choice to be able to take on that staff. I don't have numbers. I know that it's fairly regular. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think what probably led to Campus's decision to do that is Campus has a higher turnover rate because it is a part-time student job. With Iowa City Transit and Corridor Transit, there's likely, and drawing on my experience when I was with DART buses, you know, less of a turnover because it's more of a career opportunity for several years. I don't have that number, but I can certainly get that for you.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments, questions? Okay, is there a motion to accept this?
So moved, Mo.
Okay, motion by Mo. Is there a second?
Second, Harmson.
Second. Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Anyone opposed?
Aye.
Just one vote. Okay, so it's approved, but one negative vote. Okay, thank you. We'll go on to, let's see, that was 4A, so we'll go to Emily on 4B to consider the Surface Transportation Block Grant and the Transportation Alternative Program and the Carbon Reduction Program grant funding process.
Thank you. Emily Bothell, I am the Senior Associate Transportation Planner. We typically conduct our competitive grant process every other year, and this year marks that next year that we will be allocating funds. This biennial process has historically been the desire of both our Transportation Technical Advisory Committee and this board to allow for 2 years' worth of funding to be allocated at once, thereby allowing projects to receive larger funding amounts. We anticipate approximately $10 million in Surface Transportation Block Grant Program funding, and that will be available for programming in FY 29 through 30. We have approximately $2 million in Transportation Alternatives Program funding that will be available for programming in FY 27 through 30, and approximately $3 million in Carbon Reduction Program funding that will be available for programming in FY 26 through 30. The 2025 grant process will follow the tentative timeline as shown in your memo, starting with the notice of funding opportunity that will be emailed to all jurisdictions and posted on our website on February 3rd, ending with the final FY 26 through 29 transportation improvement program that will be presented to this board for adoption in July. The TIP will include any projects that receive funding for those years, so it's our programming document. At their January 21st meeting, the Transportation Technical Advisory Committee unanimously approved the grant funding process, and today we are asking this board for approval of that process. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have, and just to give you a summary, we have our STBG funding that has 2 years' worth of funding available for 29 and 30, and that funding can be used for roads, bridges, transit, bike ped facilities, so it's our surface transportation. We have 4 years of TAP funding available, and we have 4 years because in 2023 there were program changes as a result of the bipartisan infrastructure law, and so we were told to hold off on allocating that funding. So we have a little more funding in TAP, and that can be used for on and off-road trail facilities, safe routes to school, bike and ped projects. And then lastly, we have our carbon reduction program, and this is a new program. We have not allocated funding using this program. We will begin allocating in FY 26, and we have accumulated some funds starting in FY 22. So that first year of funding in FY 26, we have approximately $1.6 million available, and then every year thereafter, we have approximately $350,000 available. So we have 5 years of funding that we anticipate we'll be able to allocate here. I wanted to emphasize that we anticipate receiving this funding. This funding is not guaranteed. So happy to answer any questions.
And quickly, I would say, as of a few days ago, it's always been guaranteed, but things just got a little bit out of sync in the last couple of days. So it is anticipated dollars, like Emily said. And joking aside, we've never had an issue with this in the past. But as we contact your staffs, ask for projects, get those projects programmed, and do all the other things that we have to do on our end to make sure that those funds are useful to your organizations. At any one of those steps, things could change, and of course, if they do, you'll be the first to know.
So these are federal dollars?
They are.
So is, yeah. Is it possible to change the name? I'm not kidding.
Yeah, I think the only way that could happen, I'm just speaking freely here, is if the state took those federal funds, used them for their own purposes, and then basically backfilled that with state money. Mm-hmm. And they have done that before I'm not sure if they could do it with these programs. I'm not sure what kind of, locks they have on them, so to speak. But when we've had government shutdowns in the past, it's a brief period of time, might be a month, 2 months, whatever that might be. They have actually done that in the past where to keep our staff whole, essentially, and keep all the other MPOs and RPAs running, they'll actually take those federal dollars, replace them with state funds, and essentially keep us whole. And then they pay themselves back later with the federal funding. So it's a little bit of, column A to column B. And I suppose that might be able to happen. The issue, I think, is going to be there's such large dollar amounts, the state probably isn't going to have the funds available to actually make that happen. But that's a really good question, and I was thinking about that in the last couple of days. Yeah. The other thing that was pretty unclear in the last couple of days is, typically once a project, let's say a road project in any one of your entities has been let, the project is underway, there might be a shovel in the ground. Typically, those projects, whether it's a government shutdown or anything else, are always left alone. They're already in, the wheels are in motion, so to speak, and they're already left alone. What was a little unclear in the last few days to me was it seemed as though it's possible that even projects that had started to proceed, whether they were let, whether they were in concept stage, whatever it was, that those might have also been in jeopardy. And that was sort of new to me. So it was a little unclear, but typically those projects that have already started are safe. So a little bit of new territory for us.
Any other questions? Then I'd like you to consider approval of this grant and program funding process. Is there a motion?
Move approval. That's
Marais. Second.
Second. Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Motion carries. And Emily, you do the next one here, right?
Yes.
Consider resolution approving participation in the Iowa DOT pavement data collection.
The Iowa Pavement Management Program, which is managed by the Institute for Transportation at Iowa State University, provides local agencies with access to pavement condition data, tools, and training for both projects and network-level activities. As part of the program, they hire a vendor to collect and provide condition data on all roads within the state every 4 years on a reoccurring basis. The IODOT funds the collection of pavement condition data every 2 years for our interstates, National Highway System routes, and Iowa DOT routes, and every 4 years for our local routes. However, local agencies, such as the MPO or individual communities, have the option to purchase local route data every 4 years to maintain a 2-year data collection cycle. Pavement condition data was last collected on local routes in our metropolitan area in 2023 at the expense of $39,000, and we use STBG funding to pay for that. The next scheduled data collection will be funded by the IODOT, and that is scheduled for this year. Today, we are asking the board to consider the attached resolution to participate in the IODOT pavement data collection program in 2027 as an MPO. With an estimated cost of $45,000 to $60,000, and that will just depend based on the vendor that is selected. The Transportation Technical Committee unanimously recommended participation in this program, and if the board approves the resolution, STBG funding will be used. So we would take $45,000 to $60,000 off of the top of that $10 million that we have available. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have about that.
Yeah, and I would just throw out, before there's any other questions or comments, that in my mind, this is a bargain, and I think most of your staff engineers think the same for $45,000 or $60,000, whatever it would be. This is really how the engineers get the smoothness and quality or lack thereof on a roadway. All your budgets are tight. We already know this. So, as you're looking on making improvements in your communities, of course, you want to make those the return on investment the best it can be. So in our minds, this is really a bargain.
Thank you. Okay, now to consider a resolution approving participation in this data collection program. Is there a motion? Okay, is there a second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Now, Kent's going to talk about the Transportation Planning Work Program and the 26-29 Transportation Improvement Program.
Yep, thank you. So just a quick couple updates for agenda item 4D. First is the FY26 Transportation Planning Work Program. Our work program is a document that we develop each year to identify projects, which will be addressed by our organization the following year. So a work program, just like it suggests. The work program is developed in a coordinated effort with the Transportation Technical Advisory Committee, so all of your staffs, the Iowa Department of Transportation, as well as this board. Work program items include all state and federally required planning processes and documentation, and ongoing and routine projects, and also special projects that we are requested of by your respective entities. We'll begin to solicit for work program projects just in a few days. And if you have any special projects that you would like us to work on, please either let any of our staff know, let your staffs know, of course, and then when we solicit for projects, they'll be able to communicate that with us. That is due April 1st, our work program, our draft. That's why we talked about having our next meeting March 28th, just a few days before that's due. And then we bring back the final work program to you all in May for subsequent and final approval. Any questions about the work program? Okay, so just another quick update. The FY26 to 29 Transportation Improvement Program, the TIP, or Transportation Improvement Program, as we call it, is the programming document for federally funded transportation improvements within the Iowa City urbanized area. The importance of the TIP is that's where we program all the projects and funding, federal funding, that we are allocating to your communities. So again, like we talked about earlier tonight, we've got about $15 million in our funds that we'll be allocating yet this spring, which is really exciting. We've got the roughly $5 million in the transit funding that we talked about earlier tonight, also available, that will be programmed in the TIP. And then that's all brought to you in July for final approval. And we'll make sure to work with your staffs to make sure all the programs are in the right years, all the funding amounts are correct, and that way you can move forward when you're ready to. Kind of exciting time for us, especially during a funding year. So yeah, about $20 million in federal funding will be available. Any questions about the TIP? Thank you.
Thank you, Kent.
Actually, I do have one question, sorry.
Sure.
Was this identified on any federal list for grants or funding that was potentially gonna be frozen?
Is the question if we have already projects in the TIP? Yeah, so that's a good question. We would have had some projects that are already, the wheels would have already been in motion, and that, you know, was a question whether or not those funds would be frozen, so to speak. And then, yeah, there's probably, Emily, I'm looking at Emily out here, she helps with our TIP, and Hannah, we probably have, oh boy, another $10 or $15 million worth of projects probably sitting in out years, so to speak, that are already allocated but not actually let yet. And like Emily was talking about earlier tonight, or excuse me, like Hannah was talking about earlier tonight, especially our SDBG funds were out already to FY29 and FY30. So those projects will sit there. Your communities will work on making sure those projects are ready to go, design and engineering and so forth. And that's just the kind of buffer time that your communities need to get that done, or your entities need to get that done. So yeah, there's a lot of money sort of sitting out on the table, so to speak. That's a good question. Yep.
Any other questions? Okay, then we'll go to update on the Trip Connect. I know that Kelly Schneider is here from Johnson County Mobility Coordinator, and your program kicked off.
Yes, you betcha. Yep. So hi, everybody. I'm Kelly Schneider, the Mobility Coordinator for Johnson County. Good to see you tonight. I was here last year talking about the anticipated launch of Trip Connect. So I'll give you a timeline on where things are at now that we've launched and share a little bit about how this service works. Okay. So Trip Connect is a response to transportation gaps and barriers, specifically employment, childcare, and education. The service model for Trip Connect would be similar to Microtransit, where you can book fairly short notice in advance. It's also smaller vehicles than what we see Coralville Transit, CAM Bus, and Iowa City Transit operating. So this is a pilot. So this is an experience for us to see what travel patterns are amongst our service area, which I'll show, and see the test the demand for evening transportation. So this is a curb-to-curb service. So it is also a shared ride. So oftentimes, you'll see more than one person on the vehicle. Okay, so here's a picture of our timeline. The original research and work for this got started in the fall of 2021. So we sat down and talked to employers and talked to people that were seeking employment about their experience. And that's where we designed this concept. After that, we did a little bit of testing where I posted some flyers around in the community saying free rides to work, and my phone rang off the hook. So with that amount of funding, we could only do 2 weeks of testing. So the flyers, you know, they kind of resonated in the community, and I would still get those calls. So that's where we decided, okay, we are on target with getting people to work. There's definitely a high response to that. Then in the fall, we started applying for pilot fundings. So this would be fall 2023. We also had our Employment Transportation Summit, where we sat down and listened to some of you in this room. We talked to job seekers, agencies that represent job seekers, and then employers, and really targeted what we could do with the amount of funding. The transportation gaps and barriers in our Johnson County are unique. There are certain days that there is no service. There are certain parts of the county that don't have service, and then certain times of the day. So it was just a really difficult decision to decide where to start. So we'll talk about where we landed. Also through those conversations at the midpoint, we discovered that the local transit agencies were not in position to expand to this type of service level. It's a lot different than a fixed route. And what we saw are the agencies, you know, Iowa City was interested in doing fare free, and that was their priority at the time. So that's where we decided that we would look for an operator outside of the local public transit systems. And then that brings us to the RFP and RFQ process, which took place in the summer and spring of 2024. Through that process, we located NTS Horizons. NTS Horizons was who was awarded the contract to operate Trip Connect service. They are a nonprofit agency that operates after-hours service in the Cedar Rapids area. They have a few other non-transportation services in Johnson County, such as Meals on Wheels, so they're very excited to have the transportation presence here. After that contract was awarded, we got to work building the app. This is an app-based service where majority of people will access their rides through the app, which I'll kind of show you a sneak peek of here. And we officially got all that together to launch on December 11th. So we are here towards the end of January, so I don't have a whole lot to share, but I can give you a few tidbits of how it's going so far. We'll do questions at the end, but yeah. If anything super pertinent comes up, we can do that. So this is where we landed on the framework of our service. So this is a 6 days a week service. There's service on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. There's no Saturday service at this time. That was to stretch our budget the most. We decided that Coralville Transit and Iowa City Transit are operating on Saturday, so that would be the day that we had to cut. This is an evening service, so our stretch of time is from 5 p.m. to midnight. It is $2 per ride. So during our very initial research, the affordability was an important conversation. So we feel that $2 per ride each direction, $4 round trip, was a good starting place for us. Okay, here's a picture of our service area. I know this is in your packet, so hopefully you can see that a little bit more clear. But this includes all of the urbanized areas. So Iowa City, Coralville, University Heights, Tiffin is in there, North Liberty, and then also all the rural areas north of Interstate 80. So we felt very strongly that we wanted to include some of the rural areas, but knew that if we did the entire county, we would be tying up our vehicles with some very long trips and maybe not be able to meet the entire demand. So it is very unique to have a microtransit service operate in both urban and rural areas. So we're excited to see how that goes. Almost a month and a half in, we haven't had any rural trips yet that I can report, but the service is available, and at 6 o'clock we'll be sharing that information with the rural board. So the vehicles. We contract to do two vehicles at all times, one of which is accessible, so it's very easy to request an accessible ride. That's an accessible minivan. The fleet is the NTS Horizons fleet, so they are responsible for hiring the driver, training, all of that good stuff. They maintain, fuel the vehicle, everything that you can imagine a transportation service would do. The other vehicle is a Ford Transit, so it's 12-passenger vehicle. So those two vehicles are running that entire length of time for the service commitment. Okay. As I mentioned, the primary access point of Trip Connect is through an app. So the app is powered by VIA, which is a very well-known transportation software company. When I'm talking to people about this, I explain that it's very similar to using Uber or Lyft, if you've ever used something like that. However, there are some differences, but that is the most comparable app that I could explain. So this is available in both Google Play and Android. We have the app available in English, Spanish, French, those three languages. So right now, majority of our ridership has been able to access the app, so that we're very excited that access is there. For people that cannot access that way, we do have I'm skipping around a little bit here. NTS does have a call center. So if you're somebody that needs to pick up the phone and make your trip request that way, you would access that through the call center. Same with payment. Yeah. When you're setting up your profile, you do need to share your phone number, your name, and your email. The next step before you can book a ride is to have ride credits available. So we are seeing that a lot of people do have debit or credit card. However, what we're most excited about are voucher codes, and there's just an endless way to go about that. We were interested in having agencies purchase voucher codes that they distribute to job seekers. Ideally, we would see employers purchase voucher codes that they could extend to their new hires. There's a lot of different ways that we could subsidize that ride. So if somebody needs to pay cash, that would never be taken by the driver. That's not how this service model works. They would have to stop by the Meals on Wheels, which is now also the NTS Horizons office in Coralville, and they could load cash on their account that way. So that's our plan for access points that way, and so far nobody's done that. So that really goes to speak on, you know, smartphone access and how that's working. So. Okay, I think I talked about the service window a little bit. The minimum amount of time that you can require is 1 hour, and that's a trend I'll go ahead and say. Our people are usually waiting until they need that trip to make that. So when we originally designed this, we thought, oh, let's let people book 14 days in advance, and most people do not even book more than without a couple of days in advance. So that's an interesting trend to see, is that the on-demand aspect is more attractive to the ridership in this area. So we're very pleased with that so far. We are trying to get the word out as much as possible. We could appreciate your help making sure your networks share what work has been done so far. I have a copy of the flyer if you need that. We have an advisory committee that's talking about, you know, we have a good representation from Shelter House. We have a couple of employers that attend. And we're all talking about what that access point and how that works for everybody. In addition, Kirkwood. That is in our service area. And I think on Monday this week, I had about 30 different ESL English language learners download the app so that they can use that to get to the research park area after the CAN bus is done running for the day. So we're excited to wrap around those services. Other trends that we've seen are people are booking right at 5 o'clock. So that's really kind of telling us that maybe our demand is heavier during the daytime. We have great daytime service within Iowa City and Coralville, but when we talk about North Liberty, there's no daytime services up there. So we're already looking at, if we could expand, how could we help some daytime service get connected? Okay. So, questions about the service go to NTS Risons. The county is funding this service in addition to being the visionary of the service. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you have on that. We'll also be looking forward to sharing data once we get some solid data to share. But I will share just a couple of tidbits here if we have time. Okay, so right now we're doing about 50 rides per week. We're seeing a lot of people look on the app and search for trips, but maybe not book. So that's again telling us this isn't potentially meeting their full need, and maybe we need to consider what daytime service would be, and if that would help them find the solution that they're looking for. I mentioned the very high demand earlier in the shift. We still see people coming home around midnight. One rider has been a regular returning rider, and I could tell by their address that they're working at a care facility. So if you can imagine a nursing home, they have 24/7 staff. So we're pleased that that's helping them, but the high demand in the earlier parts of the day is really telling us that we could potentially shift. Okay, there are 220 rider accounts that have been created so far. Of those, 1/5 of those have been taking a ride, and there's a good chunk of those that keep returning. So that's really telling us the story that this is being used for employment. This isn't a grocery shopping or dinner out. This is, you know, something that they're using on a regular basis. So we're very pleased to see that. I imagine some of the other data you may be wanting to know are where the trips are taking place. So about 60% of the trips started in Iowa City, 25% started in Coralville, 8 in North Liberty. On average, the trips are about 4 miles, so that's not very long. 4 miles usually ends up being about a 12-minute ride. The return trips, so trips six, pretty much the same as what I just shared. About 60% of trips are ending in Iowa City, and 25 are ending in Coralville, and 12 are ending in North Liberty. So that's the way to that so far, but just keep in mind, we are not a full 2 months in yet, so. Questions?
I have a question. Yeah, I just want to ask, because you said you have 2 vans so far, and how does this work for people like scheduling, you know, ride at 6, 5, 6, 7, 8? How that work?
Like large groups?
Not a large group, like somebody is scheduled at 5 o'clock, another person is scheduled at 6 o'clock.
Okay.
And that way, how you accommodate all those?
So that's the software's role, is to plan out what time somebody would be picked up and if they're going to share a ride with somebody else along the way, and which vehicle is on what part of the service area and at what time.
You can see all that.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. So there's more data than we ever thought we'd capture. So if you have things that you would like to look at, please let us know. There seems to be endless possibilities. Yes. Yeah. Any other questions?
With the volume so far, have you had any people that have had to have any, you know, unexpected long waits on either pickup or it sounds like, just kind of.
Right. In terms of wait time, you're always provided a 30-minute window.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So if you need to be ready within that 30-minute window, that pickup window. I haven't seen any cases where, I would have to look at that specifically, but we have definitely not heard of anybody arriving late or the driver being outside of the time the window that they're supposed to be.
So if I called at 5, need a ride at 6, they'd say anytime between 5:45
yes.
and 6:15.
Yes, and then that's what's really nice about, and this is where we can compare this to Uber or Lyft. You get notifications from the app when that driver's in motion and as they're coming close to you. So you kind of have that countdown once your window is started. So it's very convenient.
And then if somebody calls, like, further in advance, so they get priority. So I book my ride for 6 p.m., but 3 days ago, and somebody else books a ride for 6 p.m. at 5 o'clock tonight, we're in two different places.
Yes. Yes, that's
earlier is better for somebody who wants to use it.
So far, we have met the demand.
Sure.
But this is 2 months in. So
this is great.
Yeah, each day I can log in and see, you know, what time people were requesting, what time they were actually riding. And so far, most people are waiting closer to the time that they need. But like you said, if you do book in advance, your reservation sits there. So all other reservations that come in after that are built around that particular time. And the software is pretty quick. So if you're more of a short notice rider and you're going to look for your trip, it's going to say, not quite this time, but here's the time that we're going to pitch to you, and this is your pickup window. So it's pretty slick like that.
I look forward to the next update, and speaking only for myself, I would be absolutely fine to see you in 6 months and not a year, just because this sounds like a really cool thing. But that's only me. I don't want to presume to speak for the body.
Yeah, that was definitely kind of one of the markers we were talking about. How much data you want to see? I feel like it's a bit early to say solidly, but, you know, for the most part, things are going expected. One of the other things I did want to share is at the end of your ride, you have an opportunity to leave feedback. We've only had 5 stars, so people are excited about.
Thank you, by the way, too, for the Sunday service. I know that's something that we've been very concerned about here in Iowa City, have not been able to make work because of the logistics involved. And so I think that was a nice choice that you made on that.
The ultimate goal is to have this be countywide and fill in all those nooks and crannies of what our current existing public transit can't do yet. We're starting with 5 to 7. Initially, it's kind of waited out, but Sundays are always the most popular day for the service so far. So if you guys are interested in seeing time of the day of the week where rides are most popular, we can definitely put that together for you.
This time around, I'd love to see that.
What's
next time you come, yeah.
Okay.
Well, 5 to 7 on Sunday, like evening, right?
Yes. So it's 5 to midnight on Sundays, yeah.
5 to midnight.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes. If the funding was there, that would be a great move for us, yeah. So we'll keep you informed on what those trends look like. But so far, Sunday's been a popular day. I think campus has very limited service, but for the most part, that's not quite meeting the demand of what could be there. So there's definitely potential there.
Are you collectively sharing the data with our transit operators?
With the who?
With our transit operators.
So we are scheduled to meet with them in February, actually, right around Valentine's Day. And then I provide them a monthly update of what's been going on with my work. In February, I'm going to talk to them about what data points they want to see. I know Darian's been messaging me about how things are going. So she's had the first set of data she had was for the half a month that we had. But yes, we'll definitely be engaging them. Yeah.
Great. And then just logistics for riders. I understand that the rides are intended for employment or education, training.
Yes.
Childcare, right? And just looking at the FAQ on the website, so like a parent can take their child to daycare?
100%. Okay. Yes, we want to enable them to be able to take their children to childcare if they need to go to work or school. Yes. Children under 18 riding as a passenger, as a guest, are free. NTS policy, which we adopted, allows children age 16, or youth rather, age 16 to 18 to ride independently. In that case, they're the primary passenger and they would pay the $2 fare. So if a teenager wanted to access work, which makes sense with our service times, they could definitely do that. Yeah. We're also excited to be able to pick certain addresses and say, okay, this is how many people are arriving and departing Kirkwood in the evening, and talk to Kirkwood about how they can become involved financially, more importantly, on to sustain this past pilot phase. So
that was actually my question, was
about tracking specific places where there would be
hotspots.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. I was thinking that, or PNG, or as you said, assisted living facilities, hospitals. So just to know that sort of, then you could reach out and make sure that people knew about it, but then also
right.
perhaps.
I feel it's a little too early in the day to confidently say, here's.
Oh, I just meant, are you tracking that? Not like
absolutely
that you've got
will it be separating
nailed
that
down
out.
Yet.
Yeah. There's a lot of ways that the VIA software can set up an automatic report. So if you were interested in everybody arriving to Target, we could have that port automatically represented each time period, and then we could sit down and have that conversation with Target about how impactful this is to their workforce. Yeah. So feel free to come along in those conversations. Yes, we always look for that support.
Kelly does a phenomenal job. I just wanted to say, I just downloaded the app, by the way, and as somebody who has used Uber and Lyft, it is very slick.
Yes.
And it's really cool to see that this is an app created for Johnson County.
It is very specific to us.
That is wild to me. That's amazing. And I just wanted to point out that, you talk about the vision of this, and that really is from you. I just want to say that, all of the focus groups, all of the, here's the gaps and things like that. Thank you for driving this forward, because
no pun intended.
or intended, yeah. Good job. But the gaps in workforce and childcare are so clear, and to go from pilot to now seeing this as an app is like. It's just stellar work, and thank you so much for your dedication to this.
Yeah.
I know it will really fill some gaps, just the Sunday service, the times. You've lowered so many barriers with multilingual, having it only be $2. I remember the conversations about having children on board and how that's going to be free. It's so thoughtful. Thank you for making our county really, truly.
Of course, I appreciate the recognition, and I'm glad you pointed out that even some of the feedback that we've had, while the data is just starting to brew, it's the stories for me where we're at the advisory committee and shelter house staff shares that they just had a youngster that was able to seek employment for the first time, and they're using this, and that's what's connecting them to their job. And that's, transportation tends to be the afterthought compared to housing and childcare. Those are very relevant, but sometimes it's a missing piece for them, and it's hard to put, data or number to stories like that. So we're excited to see how that looks. Any other questions? You bet. Thank you guys for having me. It was nice to see you. I'll be back.
Thank you,
Kelly.
Thank you, Kelly. Kent, why don't you pencil in July? Because I think there's enough interest by the board and to get a updated report.
Yeah, definitely will do. And, this is just a few months old, as Kelly mentioned. And when I reached out, Kelly said, well, this would be new information for a lot of folks. So we knew you'd be excited to hear it.
Thank you. Is there any other business?
Please, I had
yes?
something. I apologize for not catching this when Ken announced it, but I was looking at my calendar. And the Board of Supervisors has budget public hearing at 5:30 on March 26th. So that may be a challenge for us to do a 4:30 that day.
Okay.
So I wonder if maybe the week before or something would
sure.
be possible.
Yeah, we've got some things. No, I appreciate that, Rod. We've got some things due that will require a certain amount of time on our end, but if we can move it, we definitely will, and if not, I'll give you a large heads up, so maybe you can find an alternate or something as well.
Okay, well, because it would take the whole board,
yeah.
alternates would be difficult.
Okay, yeah.
Are we having that meeting at the county?
TBD.
Okay,
yeah.
That
well,
help.
And that could help, yeah.
Could help.
Yeah. It's typically...
Well, it'd probably be in the same room, which would be a challenge.
Okay, we'll talk.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks
Thank
for that,
you.
Appreciate it.
I think I remember this last year, Ron.
I don't know.
But anyway, okay, thank you for adjusting on that. Is there any other business?
I did have one other quick thing I wanted to mention, and I don't want to get ahead of this, but just to let everyone know, I know Greater Iowa City, Inc. had, well, let me back up. I've been giving presentations to this board and at joint entities and various other places on sort of a roadshow for the last few months about the Cranick Railroad, right, and different options we have available to us, whether it's bus rapid transit, whether it's permanent passenger rail, or this pop-up metro concept that the Greater Iowa City Inc. had been working on. I did learn really late last week and a little bit early this week, too, that Greater Iowa City Inc. had had some conversations with Cranick as soon as last Thursday, and it sounds like Cranick isn't as excited in pop-up metro as we had hoped, and I just wanted to share that with the group. I don't have a lot of the details on it, but I think when asked if you know, we could move forward with pop-up metro, I think the answer, at least as of last Thursday, was no, we're not interested. So that was a little bit of a shocker, I think, to Greater Iowa City, Inc., and a little bit of a shocker to me as well. So just wanted to throw that out there. I think there's more to come, but at least that's not looking as promising as it once was. But like I say, we've been working with Katie Gerlach and Nancy Bird. We'll continue to do so and see what happens.
Any other business? Okay. Is there a motion for adjournment? Second. Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion. Adjournment now.
Thank you for your time, everyone.
No. I know.